Conversation between Pinky May and Walter Langford is being recorded in Pinky's home in San Antonio on March the 19th, 1990. And I want to ask, from Southern Indiana, how did you get into baseball? I mean, you were playing it as a kid, I'm sure. And
oh, yeah, I was always in love with baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And played semi-pro and a little high school, not much.
I did the same.
And then I went to Indiana University and I made the team there.
Uh-huh.
And that was where I was scouted by the Yankees.
Uh-huh. Did they sign you?
Yeah. Paul Critchell was a scout.
Oh, yeah.
That signed me out of Indiana. That was a happy day for me.
Natch.
My coach called me from his office. Well, he had a little sporting goods store there.
Uh-huh.
And he called me and told me that Mr. Critchell was there and would like to offer me a contract. If I was interested, why,
sure,
come down. And I think I ran all the way, about a mile or two.
I understand.
Yeah, that was a happy day.
And well, where did they send you then in minors?
Where did they send me?
Yep.
When I left Indiana, they sent me, after my senior year, they sent me to Wheeling, West Virginia. They had a working agreement with a farm club there, and that was where I first reported. That was in the Middle Atlantic League.
Mm-hmm.
And the next year, I went to the assignment at Durham, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And that was right in the heart of the Depression, of course.
Sure.
The next year, I went to Binghamton, New York, which was their Class A Eastern League club,
right?
And the one year there, and then I went to Newark, and I was between Newark and Oakland, California. I was in AAA 4 years there before I was drafted by the Phillies.
All right, so in 39, you arrived at the Phillies.
39 was my first year with the Phillies,
yep.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And it interests me to see that you had as a teammate another Pinky.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Pinky Higgins. And he was from?
No, Pinky Whitney.
Pinky Whitney, excuse me. Pinky Whitney, and he was from San Antonio.
Right.
San Antonio.
I talked to him here in San Antonio 8 years ago.
Yeah.
He has since died, you know.
Yes, a couple of years ago, I think. It might have been three.
Two, I think.
Yeah.
You're right. And he was at the end of the line, and you were starting up.
Well, yes, I was. Of course, I wasn't too much of a rookie anymore.
That's right.
I was 28 years old, I think. Or
you were?
About 28 years old. Of course, at that time, it's different than it is now.
Oh, yeah.
Clubs could hold you back. There wasn't any force feeding you up, you know.
Yep, which there is now.
So that, by the way, I just noticed in today's paper that the lockout is over, that they're going to play baseball.
Oh, no, I haven't seen today's paper. Is that really
I'll get the headlines there where you...
Good grief, it's about time, isn't it?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Gee whiz. I mean,
yes, everybody wants baseball. I think the owners and players both.
How about that? Thank you. Yeah. That's wonderful.
Well, I think about that, many times. This is two or three times there has been a strike.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate, but as far as I'm concerned, there's progress been made all along.
That's right.
For the better.
True. Thank you. But to jeopardize the season, they both would have been
losers.
Losers,
yes.
Absolutely. And with the salary the players are getting, the minimum of going to 100,000 and more, and the average 500,000, and the pension is pretty gorgeous.
Tremendous,
now.
Yes.
And the owners are making money off all these TV contracts. My God, you'd think they could take care of that. Think of the fan situation and get the thing going.
Well, I predicted it would be over by the 10th of this month, what I predicted.
Missed it a little bit.
I didn't figure that either one of them would want to jeopardize the start of the season.
Well, they're going to start a week late.
Yeah, that's the way I
guess they can make those games up.
I understand they're going to start the 9th.
That's what they said. Yep.
And I think they're both ready for the season to start.
Oh, my, yes. Well, that's the best news I've had today. Okay, now, your manager, the first few years you were there in Philly, was old Doc Prothrow.
Doc Prothrow, yeah.
How was he?
He was, well, he was a friend of mine.
Good.
I don't know whether, I think he was maybe criticized by some of my teammates, being maybe, well, not major leaguer or country or something like that, but I thought a lot of it.
Good.
In fact, I thought a lot of all of my managers, with the exception of one.
Which one?
And Doc was one of my friends, yeah.
Yeah.
The
only other managers you had in the major leagues, I think, were Bucky Harris and Freddie Fitzsimmons.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Now,
well, was Hans Lobert the manager in there for a little short time?
Well, I've got a book here that tells me.
I'm not sure.
I don't think so. Let me check it now. 39, it just lists Prothrow. 40, Prothrow. 41, Prothrow.
42.
You're right. Lobert was the manager in 42.
For a short time there.
Yeah.
But the managers there had a tough situation.
Oh, my.
They had a tough situation.
Yeah.
Our owner didn't have the financial stature, I guess, and he was forced to sell his better players to operate the club, and so I had, as I stayed in baseball longer and did some minor league managing and so forth, I understood
that the situation,
problems they had there.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I'm going to run down the list of mention some of your teammates for each season out of the encyclopedia here, and any one of them that you want to say something about, something good, bad, or indifferent, or some incident, something unusual, maybe amusing, you cut in. You had a lot of good names there within Philadelphia, but most of them were over the hill.
Yeah, that's
right. Lloyd Wehner and various other.
Oh, Lloyd, sure.
But here, in 39, you had people like Gus Suhr, and I think he was
first baseman, to me, he was a gentleman, and he was a good ball player, but like you say, he was a little over the.
He had his best years.
Uh huh.
Gus died a few years back, too. Several years back.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. How about Joe Marty?
Joe Marty. Well, he was always he was a teammate of mine that came from Chicago. He had a tremendous year one year in Chicago, and the next year we wind up with him, and he never lived up to his potential at Philly. I don't know why.
That can happen.
Yeah, it sure did. Yeah. I don't know. If my memory serves me right, I think he hit maybe in the 330 area somewhere at Chicago.
He might have.
And when he comes to Philly, he dropped down tremendously.
Yeah, he hit 254 that season for you.
And, that's a pretty big drop, you know.
Yeah.
Seemed like, I don't know what happened. He was a boy from Sacramento, California, if I remember right. And I think he liked his after the game hours, you know, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He enjoyed a beer or two, or maybe three, and that may have been
part of
his downfall.
Yeah. All right. Let's see who else we got here. Maury Arnavich.
Arnovitz. I'll tell you a story about him. I saw him get 5 for 5 one day in, I think it was Pittsburgh. 5 for 5, and not a ball was hit through or by the infield.
How in the world?
Now, can you imagine that?
No.
Swinging bunts or bad hops, yeah, or that hit somebody in the chest or something. But 5 for 5 and
looks good in the box score, but
yeah, it sure
didn't
did
mean much.
I would take him. I would take him when
that's
I was
right
playing.
Yeah.
And I see one time he held up a game in the outfield coming in. I thought he was choking or something. It happened, and he swallowed a bug. He swallowed a bug, and he put on a real show there, you know, I guess.
I don't know what I'd do if I swallowed a bug either.
He was a Jewish boy,
yeah,
but some of the boys always got a kick out of hitting him a little bit,
mm-hmm,
you know. But he was a good Joe. Good
That's
Joe.
Good. And you had Spud Davis behind the plate.
Well, Spud was a big guy that I think you mentioned before, one of those fellows that was on the downhill side,
yeah,
in his career by the,
yeah,
time the Phillies got him.
Yeah.
He was much overweight, and but he was a fine man and a buddy of mine.
Mm-hmm.
But I know from experience when after you get so old, you lose your touch and so
That's
forth.
That's right.
And
it happens. And you can't put your finger on it, and you can't do much about it. Yep. Kirby Higbee.
Kirby, well, I'll have to let Jane tell you about his wife. She's got a story about his wife.
Tell me, Jane.
Well, you think it should be taped?
Yeah.
Well, it's not that bad.
If you don't want it used, I won't use it.
It isn't that bad. They were from, where were they from?
Higbee, South Carolina. From South Carolina. Girl.
And very anti-Negro. And we were at the ball game one day, and his wife's name was Ann, and she was sitting with me. And a black man behind us got on Kirby.
Uh-oh.
And she turned around in the seat, and she says, "You black SB." And when she did, she hit her hand, hit this finger on the back of the seat, and broke her finger. But I have to tell him the rest of the story.
Yes, now another lady, too.
So at the same time, there was a fellow by the name of Vernie Coy on the team.
Oh, yeah.
And they were from
Texas.
Right down here somewhere.
Down in Sealy, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife was just a perfect lady in every way.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were at the game one day, and a man next to her got on Ernie. And she just sat there, and she just squirmed and did everything in the world. And finally, she took her hand and laid it over on that man's leg, and she says, "Pardon me, sir, but I'm Mrs. Coy." And that man was so embarrassed, he nearly died.
He should be.
But the funny part of it is the way the two different ways the women handled
That's
the
right.
situation, you
That's
know.
Right. Good example of each.
Yes.
Kirby was a good pitcher. He had good stuff
on
the ball.
Yeah, he was a good pitcher. Yeah.
And if he'd have taken a little better care of himself, he might have been even better,
yeah,
you know. Who knows?
He brought out a book here before he died about his career. I didn't read it, but I know that he did, and
what was the name of it?
I can't be sure. If I find it, I'll send it to you.
I'd love
that
to read it.
I would,
yeah,
like to read
because,
that.
He's telling a lot of the best stuff about Kirby that there is.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I read reviews of the book, and I remember that he was a...
Well, there's
a whole
lot to tell about Kirby.
Yeah, I got it. I'll see if I can look that up. I'll make a note.
Yeah, I think he's from down, was it Camden, South Carolina? Somewhere down in South Carolina.
Yeah, South Carolina.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And of course, when we mentioned Ernie Coy, he was a teammate too there, and he's from down at Sealy, and I played with him one year at Bingham. The year I was with Bingham, I played with Ernie. And I asked him where he was from, and he said, "Sealy." Well, Sealy where?
Yeah.
Sealy, Texas.
Everybody ought to know that.
Haven't you ever slept on a Sealy mattress? He didn't say that they were made there,
no,
but he
no,
said,
no,
haven't
no.
you ever slept on a Sealy mattress?
Well, you also had Hugh Mulcahy pitching then.
Oh, he was a gentleman.
Yeah.
He was a gentleman. Yeah. And he was from the Boston area.
Mm-hmm.
One of those gentlemen that rolled his R's a little bit up there.
Yeah.
And he was a fine pitcher, fine pitcher. And went into service and spent about 5 years. I think if he was maybe the first, one of the first, he was the first on the Phillies to go. But and he spent 5 years of service, and when he came back, he was a different pitcher altogether.
Oh, yeah. A lot of them were.
It was one of those mysteries that happened.
A lot of them were.
Yeah.
And others have told me that, and other players have told me about pitchers on their teams that came back and they had done something during the war, gave him a sore arm or some other problem, and they were never the same pitcher again.
I don't know why, but he asked me what was wrong, and I said, Hugh, I said, you're a different pitcher. I said, you used to deal from way out in here, you know. And he was lifting his arm up here, but he never became the same pitcher again. Mm-hmm. But he was always a gentleman, though.
Yeah. And you had Boom Boom Beck.
Boom Boom Beck was my roommate.
Is that right?
He was my roommate most of the time in the major leagues. And I always loved Boom Boom. He was one of those particular guys that his locker had to be just so-so, you know.
Uh-huh.
It had to be arranged just right. He was meticulously clean.
Yeah.
He had a certain way to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his way to do it. He'd get in his car and he'd sat there for 5 minutes to warm up the motor and things like that. And did you hear how he got the nickname Boom Boom?
I think they were hitting line drives, weren't they?
Well, they were hitting line drives off of him in Brooklyn, he told me one time when he was in Brooklyn. And I think that was when that outfielder Herman, you know, that was a good hitter and
poor outfielder. Babe Herman.
But Babe was playing right field, and I guess they were bouncing some of them balls, line drives off the right field fence off of it. Manager came out to take him out. And, of course, Boom Boom was a terrific competitor, you see.
Yeah.
And instead of handing the manager the ball, he just turned and threw it against the right field fence.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Herman was had his mind somewhere else out there, and he thought it was another line drive off the fence. Boone says he picked it up and threw a strike to second base on the track he threw off. So they called it Boom Boom after that game.
Yeah, I've heard that story. I forget who told me it, but they had Hack Wilson in right field.
Well, it might have been Hack.
One or the other. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, don't make any difference.
They said Hack had been out imbibing pretty heavily the night before, and he was dozing around and thought he was running his ragged too, his tongue was out chasing all those line drives off the fence, and he got it, and as they said, he made a perfect peg to second base.
Yeah. And it slipped my mind, what are we going to say?
That's all right. Let me give you somebody else to. Another once fine pitcher had a little stay with you that season, Claude Passeau.
Claude Passeau, yeah, he was. He developed that as a Philly, I think. Probably there was a top notcher, and he was one of those players that the club was forced to let go for lesser players and so forth. And he's had some went to the Cubs and had some good years pitching for the Cubs.
He sure did.
Yeah.
And you had an old-timer there who lives up in Austin now named Al Hollingsworth.
Al Hollingsworth. Well,
is he still living? My goodness. Yeah. And he lives in Austin.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Be darned.
Well, he was a left-handed pitcher that spent, I don't know, a couple, maybe 3 years with us. One of those, he was a better pitcher than your record shows. Cy Johnson, once read that he said that the pitchers at Philly didn't get as much offense and didn't get as much defense either they should have had. Or the
rest
would have been
better at that time. Yeah.
Do you know if does Claude Passeau have a son that played ball?
I don't know that, but I've never seen it.
Uh-huh.
And I come across a lot of father-son uh-huh. combinations. In fact, it's either a list that's available to researchers or there is a book even about fathers and uh-huh. sons lately. I'm not sure. But Cloud pitched a one hitter in the World Series once, if I remember right. Looked at the
I wasn't aware of that.
I think he did.
And right.
Yeah. Well, the next season, you had people like, in 1940, people like Bobby Bregan.
Bobby Bregan, well, he was shortstop. Mm-hmm. I played alongside of Bobby. And Bobby was one of those heady players. He was an intelligent mm-hmm. ball player.
Yeah, a thinker.
But didn't quite have
the talent.
Physical talent that go along with it.
Uh-huh. I met him long after his playing days were over. After I retired as a professor at Notre Dame, I was running a private foundation in the Dominican Republic. I was a Latin American specialist at Notre Dame. And I spent a lot of time in Latin America. I took the first group of Peace Corps volunteers to Chile in 1961 and was in charge of them there for 2 years. I took Notre Dame foreign study programs to Colombia and to Mexico City. I've been in Mexico an awful lot.
Uh-huh.
And then I had 3 years running this private foundation in the Dominican Republic, and Bobby Bregan came over with the then Commissioner Bui Kuhn, and the ambassador in Santo Domingo put on a luncheon for them and invited me as one of the people to come, so I chatted a while with
uh-huh.
Bobby. He was interested in promoting something having to do with minor league baseball or baseball in other countries at that time.
I think Bobby's from up here to Fort Worth.
I think he is. He's still around and active.
Uh-huh.
He's an active guy. Then in 40, you had Chuck Klein.
Chuck Klein was another Hoosier of mine.
Mm-hmm.
From Indianapolis, I believe.
I believe.
And I think he played most of his career. Played all of his career with the Phillies before I got there in Baker Bowl.
Uh-huh.
And Chuck was a pull hitter, and Victor Bull was
made
the major for him.
Yep.
And I guess he had some real good years there for the Phillies. And while I was there, he was a coach, pinch hitter, active player.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think he went to the Cubs for a while. Am I thinking of?
I'm not
Kiner.
Sure. I'm not sure.
I think it was Klein. And he didn't have quite as good a time at Wrigley Field as he had had in Baker Bowl.
Is that right? I didn't remember him going to the club.
Well,
did you, honey?
I'll check and see if I'm
I've got a book here that would tell.
Yeah, I've got it. I can get it right here, as a matter of fact.
It don't make any difference.
No, not
hold on. I think cancer kind of finally claimed him.
Huh? I didn't know that.
Chuck Klein, yes.
Is that right?
Oh, yes. Yes. I heard him tell a story that the way he liked the hamburger was to throw it on the grill and turn it over and then put it in the bun. That's the way he liked it.
Yeah, here it is. He was from 28 to 33. He was with the Phillies. 34, 5, and 6. He was with the Cubs. 37 through 39, he was back with the Phillies. In 39, he went sometime during the season, went to Pittsburgh. And in 40, back to the Phillies.
Huh. You know, I didn't know that.
Yeah. He moved around some.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was born in 04 in Indianapolis.
I didn't know that. Did you, huh?
Well, let's see. Your pitching staff didn't change very much in 40. You had... In 39, you'd have, well, in 40, you had both of them. Sylvester Johnson and Cy Johnson were both listed with you in 40.
Yeah.
Cy was 5 and 14, and Sylvester was 2 and 2.
Well, there again, Cy was a much better than his record
showed.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Cy was in the, came up, well, they originally came up with Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then went to the St. Louis organization, the Cardinals, and they sent him down to Rochester, and that's where I knew Cy first.
Yeah.
Because he was tough for me to hit. And when I went to the Phillies, Doc Prothero asked me about the pitching in the International League, and I said, well, all I know about was tough ones for me to hit, and I mentioned Cy Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
But he was always tough for me to hit. He had a high slider,
yeah,
which pitchers don't like to throw, but it was tough for me to hit. So the next week or two, Cy's with the with the Phillies. And of course, Cy Johnson was a reliever. That's what he was used mostly.
Yeah.
And he was from Oregon, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And he was another one that was a little over the hill. During the years I was with the Phillies.
Yeah. What about Johnny Rizzo?
Johnny Rizzo, well, if he could have lived up to his potential in the minor leagues, he could have really helped the Phillies.
Yeah, I played against him in some semi-pro ball before he got going, really, down in Rio Grande Valley. And then he moved on up, and everybody thought he was going to be a big star, but he never made it.
Well, he hit tremendously in the minor leagues,
right,
if I remember right, and hit with some power and so forth. And well, do you know, it seems like some few players that can hit in the minor leagues and can't hit in the major leagues.
Lou Novikoff was
Yeah.
And well,
Ox Eckhart from
another.
The Coast League. He'd hit
that's
398
right.
yeah. out there and go to Detroit and hit nothing.
Well, Joe Hauser hit 60-some home runs for Minneapolis in the minors and had a little time in the major, but never did much. There's a lot of them like that.
Well, that's the kind of game it is.
That's exactly right. You never know. And Wally Berger was with you a little bit in 1940.
Well, he was with us. I don't remember being with us very long.
No, he's listed as only on 20 games.
A tall, well-built. I thought he should have been a pitcher from his build.
Yeah.
Tall, stringy guy that had a lot of power, I guess.
Yeah, he did, because he set the record for a rookie with, I think, 38 home runs, which lasted until a year or two ago.
Was that in, with what club?
Well,
Boston?
I think that's Boston, yeah.
Boston, I thought.
Yeah.
Well, there again, the park may have helped him, you reckon?
Possibly.
And maybe Joe Hauser, the Minneapolis park may have helped
him.
Oh,
I'm sure it did, yeah. Very good. Berger, Wally. 30-37 with Boston. 37-38 with the Giants. 38-40 with Cincinnati, and finished off with 20 games with the Phillies in the end of 40.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wally Berger, it's hard for me to keep.
He died a couple of years ago also.
Hard for me to keep the different teammates.
Sure.
Separated in years there at Phillies.
I'm sure of that. Let's see what else. How about Nick Etten, who played first base for you in 41?
Nick Etten?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a pretty good ball player. Pretty good ball player. Pretty good hitter, too.
Yes, what?
And
hit 311 this year for you.
And he hit a little to left field, which a good hitter will do, the opposite field,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
There's not too many hitters that are dead pole hitters that
can get by with just
can get by with
yeah.
being a dead pole hitter.
Yeah. Danny Murtaugh was there.
Danny Murtaugh, yeah, he was our second baseman.
Mm-hmm.
Later went to Pittsburgh and
became quite a manager.
Where he made a name for himself.
Yep.
He was a manager when our son broke into Major Leagues at Pittsburgh, yes.
Uh-huh. Your son was which May?
Milt May.
Milt, oh, the catcher.
Yeah, uh-huh. That's our son.
Well, I didn't know that. Yeah. Where is he now?
He's a coach with Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh.
He still lives in Bradenton.
Yeah.
And he and his family. And I talked to him this last, when was it, about a week ago, wasn't it?
No, it was just this, about Saturday night.
Yeah. And he was going to start working with the Pittsburgh minor league club.
Yeah.
Their minor league clubs are
right. They've been practicing, yeah. Well, that's interesting. And Danny Littweiler was in your outfield.
Yeah, he was one of those fellows that kind of lived up to his potential with the Phillies.
Well.
Not too many of them did.
Mm-hmm.
And he hit for us and hit for some power, which we needed.
Yeah, everybody does.
And Danny went on in baseball, associated with baseball and college baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he made a name for himself.
Coached college for a long time somewhere, yeah. I can't remember.
Well, he went to Florida State and went to Minnesota.
Yeah.
And where else, I don't know.
Uh-huh. How do you pronounce this pitcher? Johnny Pogoni?
Pogoni.
Yeah.
Pogoni, I always called him.
It's Pogoni, though, isn't
it? Is it? I don't know. I always called it Pogoni.
Pogajanly.
Yeah. He was a young boy that the Phillies brought up in search of talent to help the ball club and so forth. And
mm-hmm.
he did help the ball club, but he wasn't the overpowering pitcher they needed, I guess.
Yeah. Well, they'd...
And he wasn't a little on the frail side to be a pitcher.
The next season, in 42, you had Tommy Hughes pitching.
Tommy Hughes, young right-hander, yeah. Good pitcher. And he's another boy that, I'm not mistaken now, he went in service.
Left our
club and went in service. That was about the time that, a little bit later, I went in service, too. But Tommy was a good pitcher for us. Good pitcher.
Whoa.
And a young boy and a lot of potential, and it seems like it kind of, he never lived up to his expectations after he came back to the club for some reason or other. I don't know why.
Still
a pretty good pitcher.
Yeah.
Still a pretty good pitcher, but we thought he was going to be an unusual one.
Yeah. Well, an awful lot of your Phillies went into the 36 of them went into the service, according to a list I've got here.
36, yes.
Of all the teams and the players that they lost for a few years, 1 year or up to four or five.
Well, I was lucky in that respect. I went in after the 43 season, but I was at an age where I was going downhill.
Yeah, that's right. All right, let's see what else I got. Rube Melton.
Well, Rube, I never could see eye to eye with Rube in what things he'd do and things that he'd say on his actions on the club.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's one of those fellows that if he'd applied himself, kept himself in condition, that he could have been a much better pitcher than he was.
Good. Tell me about Ron Northey.
Ron Northey. Well, he was a likable fellow, good hitter, turned out to be a good hitter, mostly a pull hitter. And
toward the end, became a good pinch hitter.
Yes, that's right.
He hung around for a few years, mostly as a pinch hitter.
Yeah. Well, he was a better hitter than anything else, which is a lot of times is unusual. Sometimes an individual can be a good defensive man and they'll help his inability to hit, but he was one of those other guys.
And sort of finishing off, I guess, was Lloyd Wehner.
Lloyd Wehner, he was brother to Paul, of course.
And
I used to sit around and listen to stories he would tell about he and Paul and their exploits in baseball, he was a good ball player yet, and he had been a much better ball player in the years before, you know.
I'm sure.
And
he still holds, I believe, well, maybe not, but he is still one of the few rookies that were ever collected 200 or more hits in his first season.
He's one of those guys that can run like a deer, you know. Yeah. And he put the bat on the ball, and yep. He had the speed to beat it out. A little story that he told me about, he and Paul,
mm-hmm.
when they were with
Pittsburgh,
and they went into New York to play the Giants, and it was a Saturday night, and it was a night to get out and howl, you know. And he and Paul and some other players went out and was drinking some beer and so forth. And he said, finally, when it came daylight, he went home, but Paul stayed.
Yeah.
And he said they had a doubleheader with the Giants that afternoon, Sunday afternoon, and said between them, they got 11 hits in the doubleheader. He said he got 5 between them in a doubleheader, and Paul got 6.
Well, that confirms, I talked to several players on the old Pittsburgh team. One of them was Glenn Wright, who finished about the time you started.
Yeah.
And he said Paul went into Chicago one day, and Paul had been out all night drinking, and the next day they were facing old Sheriff Malone on the mound for the Cubs, and Paul said to him as they passed, before the game started, he says, I'm not seeing too good or moving too fast today. Don't throw close to me. So Sheriff said he wouldn't, and said Paul went out and got 5 straight, maybe it was 4 straight, line drive hits, bullets just all over the place, because Malone's getting the ball out over the plate for him to use it.
Well, I think it was Spud Davis told a story that one day when they came into St. Louis to play, and he was catching, and so said Paul come up to the plate, and he said he begged Spud to not knock him down because he'd had a few, been out had a few the night before, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He said all he hit was 3 doubles that afternoon.
Yeah, he could hit. He was a character.
You wonder about someone like that, if it hadn't have been that way, would it have been better or would it have been worse?
I don't know. Another one like that really is Mickey Mantle. He now claims that he's sorry. I talked to him, not on making a taping conversation. While I was running that foundation over in the Dominican Republic,
uh-huh.
at a resort that the company I was working for ran, Mantle and Arnie Palmer and a bunch of golf people were over there one weekend for a tournament. I talked to Mantle an hour or so, and he said, "Well, I'm sure sorry. I lived it up as much as I did. I could have been a better ball player, lasted several years longer, and everything."
I heard him say on a TV program one day where someone asked him if he ever bemoaned the fact that he was in baseball before the high salaries, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought momentarily, he said, "No, I don't think so." He said, "I'd have probably pissed it away anyway." Well, I've often thought that there could have been the all-time ball player of all time.
Not much doubt.
Because a good outfielder, he could run like a deer.
Like a deer.
He had power, I could hit from right or left.
Yeah. And he came through in a clutch.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I was a great living from 26 to 74. I was living in South Bend. 26 to 30, I was a student in Notre Dame, and after a year later studying elsewhere, I went back to teach and stayed until 74. So the White Sox were my favorite team during those years, and got in there often to see them. And in the somewhere in the 60s, 50s or 60s, when Mantle was at his peak, and the White Sox were pretty good, and they were pushing the Yankees. Got in there and the Sox got off to a big lead and they were leading 7-1 and gradually the Yankees caught up. And comes the ninth inning and the Yankees were 1 or 2 runs behind. They filled the bases, 2 outs I think, and they changed pitchers and brought in Chuck Stobbs. He threw 1 ball, maybe 2, and Mantle put it in the seats and we got up in disgust and went home. I reminded him of that, and he said, yeah, I remember that. He says, I don't know why they brought Stobbs in. I'd always murdered him every time I saw him. They brought him in, and Stobbs came in shaking his head.
Was Stobbs right or left?
He's left.
Left.
Yeah.
Well,
but
I guess
Mickey was switch hitter.
He was switch hitter, yeah.
He just turned
around. He could hit either equally well, I guess, either way. Probably a better hitter left-handed.
I think
he was closer to first base.
A little bit, yeah.
You never did interview Bud Chandler, did you?
No, I was only in, he died, I think, in the last year or so.
Just the bridge.
Yeah. I was in Florida only one time with a chance two times to interview people, and I was around Tampa, and he wasn't too far from Tampa.
He lived in St. Pete.
Yeah, I talked to Al Lopez and Johnny Vandermeer in Tampa, and then we had to move on. And a year ago, or last November, no, a year ago in October, I was down in Marco Islands, farther south, you know. And I talked to Bill Werber, who was a third baseman for the Reds. In the 39 and 40 seasons.
Yeah.
And they won the pennant both years. But I had a list of other people that I wanted to get to and tried to. And it's
well, I'd say you missed the best.
I'll tell you, you missed
the best one,
yeah.
He
could have told you some stories. And when he'd tell them about some of the experience, and as he'd tell them, he'd get madder as it goes, you know.
Well, I tried.
Oh, I've had so many lads. We've had so many lads. My family,
yeah. Sure.
Alice Bud, you know, just ask him about those questions and about Barra, you know, with the general manager of the Yankees, you know, and some of his contract negotiations with
him. Yeah.
Oh, Christ.
Well, there's so many I miss seeing.
Missed a good one.
I didn't get this idea until after I'd retired and did next to nothing for a year or two, and I thought, well, hell, there's got to be something more than sitting around all the time. I hadn't done that. I had been very active, and I was Spanish and Portuguese teacher and became chairman of Modern Languages, which is a hell of a job, for 15 years nearly, and I coached on the side while I was teaching full class load and running the department. I coached tennis for 15 years and fencing for 15 years.
At Notre Dame. Is that right?
Had NCAA champions in both sports. One of my tennis captains was Jim Everett, the father of Chris Everett.
Oh, really?
Is that right?
Yeah. I knew all of the Everett family and
others.
But right in South Bend, there were old-timers like Stan Kovaleski, a Hall of Famer from the period before and after 1920, you know, he finished in the late 20s.
Yeah, I've read after him many a time.
But he's in the Hall of Fame, and he was owning and running a service station there on one of the main streets in South Bend. I used to pull in, get gasoline, and say hello and talk to him a minute, but I could have recorded anything with him and many others. So when I finally got the idea, I was too late. I missed a lot of people I think I could have reached. But there are two or three books about old-timers talking about their careers that are famous. One is called The Glory of Their Times by a fellow named Ritter in New York, a professor at the university there. And it's remarkable. And then a friend of his did one called Baseball When the Grass Was Green. Or no, When the Grass Was Real.
Monograph
real. Yeah. And he had a bunch of old-timers, and I tried to avoid the ones that they talked to rather than duplicate and repeat. But, when I was writing to a lot of these guys who played, well, before and during the 20s, and I'd get to them, I wouldn't hear from them. I'd get to them, get close to where they lived, and I'd call them up. And I'd say, did you get my letter? Well, I don't know. And I said, well, could I come see you? Yeah, come on over. I'd get there, and hell, there'd be a pile of letters this high that they hadn't gotten around to answering. And then I began to realize why when I would finally see their handwriting, very spidery and wavy.
Unstable, huh?
And they never, in their days, they never had a typewriter, never learned to type. So they couldn't answer all that mail, and a lot of it is not worth answering anyway, I gather. But anyway, that cost me from reaching some of them. Then I had bad luck on a bunch of them. Paul Richards, we missed connections. He was coming to San Diego, so I'll see you there, and we missed connections. And Rick Farrell, who went into the Hall of Fame, I don't think it should be there, but they voted him in, and I was going to talk to him in Detroit. When I got there, he was off in Canada somewhere. Things like that happen to me all the time.
Yeah.
So you can't be sure who you're going to catch.
Well, Spud was, I guess, my best friend in baseball. And we hunt before Jane and I were married. I would go down to Georgia, and we'd have a Thanksgiving hunt down there. And he knew quite a few people over Georgia where we could hunt on their ranches and so forth. And I'd get these Spud stories firsthand, you know.
Yeah.
And about old Hap, that was an old mule, and about the time he'd knocked Greenberg down four straight times or tried to, you know.
I think I read that.
Yeah. It's just like that.
Tell me about Jimmy Wasdell as a first baseman.
Jimmy Wasdell, well, Jimmy was a good teammate. I would say an average first baseman, but his asset, I think, was supposed to be his hitting. He was a pretty good hitter. And I can tell you a story about Jimmy. One off day when we was in Philly, they had a racetrack over in Camden, across the river in Philly. And a bunch of us boys went over there, including Now, five or six in a row, he had won. And I tried to get him to take some of that money and put it in his pocket.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And bet on part of his winning. Oh, he says no. He says, someday I'm going to hit 10 or 11 in a row.
Oh, brother.
And then retire. And 3 or 4 years ago, he passed away in just north of Bradenton there where we live. I don't know whether he hit 10 or 11 in a row or not.
I doubt it. Yeah. You had old schoolboy Rowe that year with you, too.
Yeah. I guess schoolboy Rowe was ahead of me in his time. He had his best years, I guess, with
Detroit.
And he had some good years with the Philadelphia.
He was 14 and 8.
He pitched some good ball for us.
Yeah.
But as schoolboy was one of those pitchers that I don't know how old he was at the time, but He was
33.
Little past his peak.
Oh yeah.
And he could pitch 6 or 7 innings of good ball, and he'd be looking to the bench for relief. And I knew we never had the relief on the bench as good as he was, you know. And I could never understand that.
He'd
be winning 2-1 or 3-2.
And you wanted out of there.
And he wanted out of there, and I could never understand that. No, there's no way I wanted out of that ball game.
Yeah. He started 27 times, only finished 11 of them, which back in those days wasn't good.
Yeah, it wasn't good. Yeah, my son and I, we argue a little bit on the merits of the way they handle the pitching staff, you know, the way they handle it now, you know, and the way they handle it back when I played.
Completely different. Oh, boy. It sure is. Yeah, well, let's see if there's anybody else here of interest. Coker Triplett.
I don't remember much about him. I think he was only there a short time that I can remember. And he was another boy that that came out of the St. Louis Cardinal organization. But I don't think he ever lived up to the potential they expected of him.
Buster Adams.
He's another boy that was only there a short time.
Both of them came through during the 43 season.
Yeah.
Last year.
And
then you had Mickey Livingston, and he was traded away during the season.
Well, he was there before, didn't he?
Yeah, he was
Mickey there before. I remember Mickey well. And pretty good catcher, and only.
He was there in 42.
Yeah. He's another one of them boys from down
there in 41. Yeah.
Carolinas, I believe.
All right. Now, tell me, you went into the service. Where did they send you?
How now?
When you went into the service, what kind of work did you do, and where did they send you?
I was very fortunate in service. They sent me to, I joined the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
Joined the Navy, and of course I went to Waukegan.
Yeah.
In boot camp, and they gave me a job there stenciling clothes for the first winter.
Yeah.
That was the winter of 43. And of course, the Detroit catcher, the left-handed hitter that is in the Hall of Fame.
Cochran.
Mickey Cochran was her manager. And that year, I think I don't know how many games we won, but we only lost two. And we had a good ball.
Who were some of the others with you? Who were some other major leaguers that were with you on that?
Well, Jack McCarthy, first base, Bill Herman, second base. Cochran was our manager.
Yeah.
We had a pretty fair.
Oh, you.
Cy Johnson.
Fair ball club, huh?
Cy Johnson.
Yeah, Cy Johnson was there. And
that little guy that rented our house in St. Pete that was managing in Honolulu.
Yeah, what was his name? Became a manager. I forget
what it's the name of the airport in Atlanta. What's the name of the airport in Atlanta? Same name.
Hartsfield. Roy Hartsfield.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. At my age, I can remember faces, but I can't remember names.
Yeah. Well, that happens to all of us.
Yeah. I can remember several of my teammates there, but I can't recall their names.
Pitcher that had some relatives at Lake Konya. Remember?
Oh yeah.
We stayed with them a while.
Junior Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
That was a relief pitcher for Cincinnati.
Yes, right.
Junior Thompson, yeah.
And that catcher, the Pinky, Biddy's son. What was his name, that big guy, the catcher? Our little boy, Biddy, is the boy.
Well,
I can't remember that.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
How long were you in the service?
2 years, 2 months, and 2 days, right down to that. I don't know about the hours, but 2 years, 2 months, and 2 days from, we spent that first summer in 44
mm-hmm.
at Great Lakes, and then in the winter they sent us to Shoemaker, California, which is a shipping over base.
Uh-huh.
And we were out there maybe a month, and then they shipped us to Pearl Harbor, and that was the year. Have you no doubt heard about Bill Dickey forming that bunch supposedly to take two teams overseas?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was involved in that. Everybody there wanted to go, you know,
sure.
Sure. But the way we heard it was that when Admiral Nimitz got, they bothered him so much about it, and he said, well, bring him over here, and then when they get him over here, station him over here. And of course, that all the big names they got out. Did you ever hear that?
Different situation. No, I hadn't heard that last part.
That was a situation there. But anyway, I was one of the little names until they was told to bring him over here in station.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got on. Then I got on.
Mm-hmm.
And we went over and we played in in front of the personnel in there where they'd gather for recreation after battle and so forth, you know.
Whereabouts was that overseas?
We played on different islands. On the hopping over, you know.
Yeah. Island hopping.
Well, we played on Mog Mog, we played on Guam, we played on Tinian, and played on Saipan.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, Peleliu,
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's enough.
It was kind of an enjoyable trip.
I'll bet.
And of course, we had a lot of privileges that the other personnel didn't have,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
They gave us our transportation and good eats, and we didn't have to stand in line and things like that.
Yeah.
And then once the season was over, they did station us over there,
mm-hmm.
but only no more than one or two at each place. Uh-huh. And I was stationed on the island of Tinian.
Yeah.
where they had five strips, five B-29 airstrips.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the island where they take off to bomb Japan.
Yep.
Now, Saipan got all the notoriety that, you know, they take off some. I think Saipan maybe had two strips.
Mm.
And we had five.
Mm-hmm.
And my quarters was not over 100 yards from one of the strips.
Oh, boy.
And when my daily duties was over, I'd go up with on the backside of my Quonset hut with some of my buddies, and we'd watch these B-29s taking off.
Yeah, yeah.
And pray that they made it.
That's right.
Pray that they made it.
Yeah.
And then a time or two, watch them when they'd come back, you know, and circling the sky and praying that they got down in time, you know.
Yep.
Wounded and shot up.
That was a bad time.
Yes, sir. It was. But like I say, I was fortunate. I didn't have any combat duty or anything like that.
Okay. When you got out of the service then, what'd you do?
When I got out of the service, in December. And
45?
December of 45. Mm-hmm. And went to spring training with the Phillies in spring of 46.
Yeah.
And was released just at the start of the 46 season.
Yeah. Okay.
And I stayed out because I'd only been home a short time.
Yeah.
So I wasn't worrying about baseball. I stayed out that winter.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year, the next fall, of course, I'm anxious to get back in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the year that Billy Herman was the manager of Pittsburgh.
Right.
And Billy Herman was from New Albany, which was close to
Laconia.
Yeah. And I contacted Billy, and he agreed to take me to spring training with Pittsburgh, and if I could make the club, fine. If I couldn't, well, he placed me as high as possible.
Good.
And about a week later, Albany, New York had a working agreement with Pittsburgh, and they needed a manager, and they contacted me to be playing manager of the Albany, New York club, and I accepted. And I was there 5 years. 5 years as manager at Albany, player manager, and then finally I stepped down the last couple of years, didn't play.
Uh-huh.
And that was the start of my minor league managing.
Well, tell me more. After that, where'd you go?
I can't tell you in order what had happened.
Well, just a minute.
But they had a slight working agreement with the Pittsburgh club. They were independent, but they worked on got some of the players from Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh dropped them, or they dropped Pittsburgh, I don't know which.
Mm-hmm.
And I was out, and then I was out of a job, and Mike McNally, who was the farm director of Cleveland at the time, contacted me for a job, managing job in lower minors.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed with Cleveland for years, several years, And I detoured there 1 year with the Yankees and was released during the season when I managed Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
And I went to Cincinnati for a year or two.
One
year.
Well, how many times were you in Tampa? 2 years, I guess.
Was it? I don't remember. Maybe two
I
years.
I think two.
Yeah. And then finally went back to Cleveland, managed.
Mm-hmm.
And I managed off and on, mostly with lower minor league clubs in the Cleveland organization until 72, honey?
I think so.
I can't get to the years.
Oh, that's close.
It's in the lower 70s when I decided I'd had enough.
Well, that was a long time.
I was getting a little long in years, and you have to pack. And go to spring tanning and pack and go to the club
that
and
travel,
come home. And it was enthusiasm for me, you know.
Well, now, did you travel when he was with the the Phillies, did you move to Philadelphia?
We, just in the, during the season. We came back to Indiana in the winter.
And then when he was managing in minor leagues, what'd you do?
Well, until the children, we have three children.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were little, I went. But as they got a little older, they didn't want to go. You know, kids get their own things. And for several years, then we didn't go. Then all at once, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then
you start going.
Start going again. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, so many of the old players tell me that the wives are the unsung heroes of baseball.
I think that's the truth.
Yeah.
They put up with
a lot of burden in raising the family and doing it alone and being absent from the, with the husband absent so long. It's a hard pull. Could you put your finger on the best day you ever had in baseball?
Well, not really.
That's asking a lot, I think.
I really can't. I there was some days that I would maybe was a little more excited than others about my association with baseball.
Well, any day where you got four or five hits that drove in winning runs and things of that sort?
Well, I mentioned earlier that I thought I was most excited when my coach called me to sign a contract in pro ball. I think that was the most excited.
Understand that.
You were most excited too when Milty drove in the run in the first night game.
Yes.
In the first night game in Cincinnati?
No, in the first night game in the World Series.
Oh yeah. He was playing then for
Pittsburgh.
He was playing for that was his rookie year. They had called him up from Columbus, their AAA club. And we, at that time, during the World Series, we were in New Mexico, up in the mountains,
in
a log cabin, about half froze to death. And we listened to this series game, and they announced that Milt May was pinch hitting, and it was the seventh inning, and the score was tied. What was
and
two
he's how old, 18 or 19?
About 19, maybe 20. And she covered her head up with a pillow. Had one of them squawky radios, you know, that you couldn't hear.
Yeah.
And they made a pitch or two, and then all of a sudden, there's all kind of a squawky noise over the radio. We didn't hear nothing. We knew something happened, but we didn't know what. And finally, when it cleared up, the announcer came back on and said, Milt May had a line drive to right field. Drove in Pittsburgh's third run. And that was the first night game in World Series history.
Uh-huh. What World Series was that? What year?
79? No, 72.
71
or 72.
Wait a minute,
71. Wait a minute, I can tell you.
I've got that.
71 or 72.
Yeah, Pittsburgh. Won the first game early. Pittsburgh and Baltimore. 71, Pittsburgh was in, so that had to be it.
That'd be it then.
But the first game, Pittsburgh lost 5-3.
71, here it is.
Yeah.
Here's the, that's the ring.
I'll be
the
done.
Duplicate of the ring.
Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm. It has a year on it.
World Series 71, yeah, World Series champion.
It has Milty's name on the back. Yeah. You got me that.
You've got the same thing book there, I guess, that I got.
Well, no, I've got that one at home. It was too bulky to bring, but I've got another one I couldn't bring either that has just World Series. I could tell you if I had it. I could check anything in a flash in World Series.
Well, there's a World Series book that I didn't understand. We just came back from Indiana a couple weeks ago, and her cousin had a World Series book over there up there that we didn't understand.
Right.
It was wrong.
Huh?
It was wrong. Had a lot of wrong information.
Well, a lot of these books got a lot of mistakes in them.
And that was one of the books.
I'll be done.
And I said, well, when I get home, I had given this boy one of these books.
Yeah.
Because I wanted a later model, see. Yeah. And I bought this
That's
one.
That's what I
And I said, when I get home, I'll find out and get it straight. And when I got home, I looked it up, and it showed that Milt May drove in the winning run, and Keeson pitched about six or seven innings of one hit ball. Mm-hmm. That someone in there?
I'm checking here, but I don't. No, I'm looking at 1960. I don't have anything. 1971. May came to bat two times and got a hit, drove in a run. And
in the fourth game.
Fourth game. Yep.
Rookie Keeson.
Walker started, and Keeson relieved him in the first inning.
And Justice saved.
Justice saved it.
Rookie Keeson pitched one hit relief for 6.1 innings, and May delivered a tie-breaking, run-scoring pinch single as Pittsburgh rallied from a 3-0 deficit to win the first 19 in World Series history.
What was the other run Melton drove in? The 2000?
Oh, he drove in when he was with Houston. He drove in the millionth run scored in baseball.
My golly.
And there's a story about that, too. It had been announced that Concepcion of Cincinnati had drove in the millionth run, but he had hit a home run. Uh-huh. And then it came in a little bit later, so when he hit the home run, he just lollipopped it around the bases, you know. Uh-huh. And in the meantime, Melt hit a double.
The guy scored in a hurry.
Got a base hit and put the man on second, and he run like hell, see?
Yeah.
And scored ahead of Concepcion.
Pretty good.
Can you imagine that?
Ah, well. Now, what are your overall memories of baseball?
Well, first of all, I can't imagine anything else that I've had more enjoyment out of than playing baseball for a living, which was a decent living at the time, but compared to the baseball salaries and standings now, it wouldn't have been too good.
No.
Very enjoyable experiences in baseball.
What do you think baseball meant to the players in your day?
Well, it meant to me a job and a living.
Right.
And back then there wasn't too many jobs.
Sure.
And the living was kind of a little on the meager side.
You know it.
And of course I think now that now there's a different conception. The improvements that have been made in baseball and the conditions under which players live and so forth are so much better.
Yeah.
That it's a positive improvement.
Yes, but I think that with all of their money and contracts and commercials and whatever, baseball is a business to these guys.
Yes,
today,
it was
a job, and it was fun when you played.
Yes.
I don't think today's players have nearly as much
fun. I think it was more competitive when I played.
More competitive.
More competitive.
Right.
You used your head more.
Yeah.
You trick plays, or you learn things to do to beat the other club.
And you weren't begging off when you had a sore finger or something.
Oh, no.
Several of them, but Glenn Wright told me, he says, well, we wouldn't get out of that lineup. Somebody was afraid somebody would take our place.
Yeah, that's right.
Like Wally Pipp. Let Gary play for a day and forget it.
Yeah.
Glenn Wright says when he was playing in the minors for Kansas City, he was a shortstop, and the player slid into him coming into second base and gashed his knee, and the skin was flabby open and falling on down, and the trainer came out and looked at it, and he says, swabbed a whole bunch of mercurochrome on it, took a safety pin, pinned it together.
Oh, mercy.
And after the game, says, I went on playing. After the game, they took me to the doctor, and he made some stitches in there.
Yeah,
you didn't come out in those days, he says.
Yeah. I think it was more fun to play then.
Yeah. And also, travel was by train, and you were together much more.
Yeah.
And they lived together in the hotels. You talked all the time with each other, and nowadays, the time is players don't see each other from one game to the next.
It's more commercial. Back then, why, like you say, you traveled together, and when you got to a town, you were together more.
Yep.
You get together to get transportation to the ballpark somewhere. Now, hell, they all got a
car,
and they make their own transportation.
More
of the business. I have to say something to defend these kids, though.
Okay.
I think they're a good bunch of boys.
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
I think they're better morally than the old ball players.
You may be right.
They're family oriented, and I know a lot of the Pirates that play with Milton and other teams, and they're all good boys, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're very family oriented,
and
when Merrill played, I couldn't say that about too many of them.
There's no question that there's some of that. The old knuckleballer, Dutch Leonard. You must have. Well, he played for the Phillies.
I've heard of him. I've heard of him.
But played before you got there, I think. But he was from a little town in Illinois, about 100 miles north of St. Louis. I talked to him 8 years or so ago. He's died since. But he says, you know, that was a trial being away from my wife and my family so much of the time. He says, if it hadn't been for the telephone, I'd have gone nuts. But I'd call her and we'd talk for 30 minutes a night, nearly every night, and it seemed like I was back home. And he says, when the young girls would call up your room and ask, can I come up and see you? And he'd say, well, just a minute, I'll ask my wife. So that was the end of the conversation. But with a lot of them, they didn't say they'd ask their wife.
That's right.
Ah, well. Who would you say was the best player you saw in your day, anywhere in the majors, if you saw the game, other American League games, possibly, but who was the best player you saw at first base?
Doc Camilli.
Second base.
Billy Herman.
I'd be surprised if you didn't say him, yeah. Shortstop.
It'd have to be Marty Marion.
Good. I talked with Marty. He's the one I've got to. And third base, aside from yourself?
Everything considered, I don't know, there were three good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have to name all three of them.
Okay.
Dwight Karowski, Bill Werber, and the first baseman for the Cubs. What was his name?
First baseman?
I mean third baseman.
Third baseman.
You know who I mean.
Well, that's Stan Hack.
Stan Hack.
Yep.
All three of them. I put them all on the same card.
Right. Let's go out to... let's not make it left, center, and right field. Just three outfielders.
Well, Terry Moore in center field.
Mm-hmm.
Terry Moore would have to be in center field.
Yep. That's where he belongs.
Medwick.
I suppose.
If I have to go to Medwick.
Yeah.
I've left Musil out there.
Yeah.
But I can't help it.
You would still put him. He was outfielder as much as he was a first baseman.
Yeah, I could put him in right field. I guess.
I think so.
I could put him in right field.
About
but Doc Camilli, he made so many plays look easy over there. He was so good that he took the sensation on it.
Yeah, they didn't appreciate him.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Didn't look hard. How about a catcher?
I'd have to go with the one that played for me. Johnny Bashford, I never did see him play up there.
Yeah, all right. And
Let's see. You know, I can't single out of
it. Let me give you a few
names. Al Lopez, I guess, but the way it handled pitchers.
Al was great.
He,
no doubt about that.
I think you'd have for his head work.
Yeah. We wouldn't go wrong with him. Walker Cooper came along.
Yeah.
About, he was just starting about that time.
Yeah, I remember.
He was that. Played in 43. Let's see if he was there. He,
and I remember Lombardi. And Lombardi, to me, was as good a hitter as there ever was.
That's right. If he could have had some speed, he'd hit 400.
And I guess he come as near beating out a base hit on me.
Is that right?
I'm telling you, know how everybody at the third base is played, he's back on the grass.
Sure.
6 or 10 feet back on the grass.
Saved your life. Yeah.
Yeah. And he'd hit blue darters. He'd hit blue darters. And one time he just topped the ball down third baseline. And I got him, he may have beat it out. It was just that close. Mm-hmm. One of them close plays. But he was so doggone slow. But I had to go across the infield to the infield grass to get it.
Yeah.
He could throw.
Yeah, could he ever.
And
give me a pitcher, right-handed and left-handed.
That I played against?
Yeah, against or for. With or against, either way. You've got such people.
Oh, there's so many there. There's so many. I'll tell you who was tough for me was Paul Derringer. He was one of the toughest.
He was tough for anybody.
He was tough for me.
Yeah.
Now, Whit Wyatt I had against him, but I never had that much. Not that he was easy, but I didn't have that much trouble with him.
Yeah.
Until he, in later years, when he come up with a changeup, you know, he could throw bullets, you know. But,
oh, yeah.
And, of course.
Well, Derringer, Walters, Brennan Fitzsimmons.
You're telling me you want a left-hander now.
Yeah, let's see what we got in the way of left-handers. Well, here's a...
left-hander.
In 1940, some of them were... Well, they didn't have any great crew of left-handers that year. Well, Hubbell was still pitching, but he was...
Yes, I think I got Dean, too. I hit against Dean against Hubbell. But shoot, they weren't near the pitchers then.
No, they were both.
I was thankful I wasn't up 10 years earlier, you know.
Cliff Melton.
Ruth Melton was tough, but I can't...
This is Cliff.
Ain't that old?
Oh, another year. There's
I can't.
Vern Olson. They really weren't specializing in great left-handers about that time. Hubbell again. Ken Heinzelman. Johnny Vandermeer. Ernie White. Max Lanier.
Was Max left? Was Max left?
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah, he won.
Yeah. That's
you know, I swear I couldn't tell you right now.
Yeah, he's left-handed.
I know he was tough. He was tough.
Howard Paulette.